I'm Ellie Wilder. I live in Iowa City, Iowa. I work for HNTB, which is an infrastructure solutions company. We work for, or we primarily do work for DOTs, so we're supporting many different DOTs nationwide. I am a geospatial community and equity solutions developer. What does that mean? I develop data-driven workflows and applications that support all things community and equity analysis for all the different project types across the nation.
Okay, so you're here at the ESRI conference discussing your new, what is it called, a tool that you guys have created?
Yeah.
Tell me a little about that.
Yeah, it's the Community Intelligence Toolkit. So it's actually a collection of content. It's not a single tool. And it came about because a lot of our HNTB members were doing some demographic analysis, and it was very time-consuming. They're doing a lot of the same type of task. And so we quickly realized that we needed to come up with a consistent approach to doing that type of analysis. There's also a lot of different data out there, and there's a lot of tools. So getting started in that type of analysis can be really overwhelming. Also with policy coming out, like Justice 40, again with tools and data, it can be hard to keep track of what we should be using and what's right for a particular project. And also the metrics that we use when we're mapping communities, those all change depending on where you're at, right? So it changes project to project and client to client, depending on what they're looking at. So we developed the Community Intelligence Toolkit, which is, like I said, an adaptable, comprehensive framework. It's not a single tool. But what that is it's, we've gone out, we've connected to the American Community Survey data up there, which is the most detailed population information that we have. And we're connecting directly to their APIs, so directly connected to their authoritative data. And then what we're doing is we're integrating that with federally provided data sets. So the Justice 40 data sets that have come out, we're integrating that so that our users have one place to navigate to and can more quickly and easily access that information. So we've gone out, we've gathered, aggregated, and processed that information. Additionally, we are hosting all that information in ArcGIS Online. So all of our members have access to that using their accounts. Within the process that we've set up to integrate all that data and process that data, we've filtered down the census metrics into over 100 different demographic topics that we've found to have significant importance to transportation equity decision making. So just if you haven't worked with census data, it's like really overwhelming. There's a lot of it. There's like 36,000 different variables available, and it's broken down into like 1,200 tables, 30 different categories. It's just like very easy to get turned around. So we filtered all that data down. We've gone and we've processed it. Traditionally, census data comes in the form of counts. So like we need to be able to compare different geographies, and to do that, we have to take into consideration relative population size. So we, again, process that data, and then from there, what we've done is, because we've been able to come up with an automated process to put all of that data together, and because we're connecting directly to that data, we've actually been able to go out and process multiple census years and also granularity. So our approach is really flexible because we can just continue to tap into the new data sources as it comes out and integrate it. And then what we're doing with that data, which is really the foundation of the entire framework, is we're creating web GIS templates, we're creating desktop templates, and bringing in those layers so that our teams can more easily access that information and start bringing in their project-specific content. What we've done is, because of all of this information is hosted in ArcGIS Online, our users, or all HNTB members, can access it via the browser. So it's built in Experience Builder, one of the applications from ESRI, and it's kind of organized into several different pages. One of them is the About page, and that really is, the benefit of that is to inform users on what the CIT is, some of the challenges that led to it, what the objective of it is, and then also includes kind of a comparison of how it compares to other tools out there, so that they know how it fits in. From there, we also have a Community Explorer, which is a cool application that we developed fully with an Experience Builder as well. And it's really more so targeted for non-JS users to be able to quickly assess a community for a particular project. So like I said, the data we have is available nationwide. We have multiple years of data. And this application lets you go in and filter by county, state. You can add your own project data and like filter to just like within a half mile of a project area. And you can quickly get the metrics for that community. You can also like export a cool report from that, as well as exporting the data. And then alongside that, like I said, it's the framework. So we have a bunch of different resources available. You can access those data layers directly, bring them into your existing maps. You can grab our templates to work with. We have a documentation page that we're really using for so that our users know exactly what data is within those layers that we're using, how we're calculating some of those metrics, as well as what data is available at what granularity, and then the data sources as well. So when it comes time to reporting, we can consistently report that information. And then we also have two other elements to like the site that you interact with. One of them is the project examples page, and it's really a place for users to understand or be inspired by how we're leveraging the CIT data. So, for example, we have different types of projects throughout the planning lifecycle that we're utilizing that information. For example, one would be public involvement. So we've built applications where we're integrating public stakeholder information with the CIT data, and that's been really, really influential. We've actually created many different dashboards using that same concept so far. So we're highlighting how you can use this data throughout different types of projects to get people kind of thinking about how they can use it on their project.
So who can use this toolkit? Is it for HNTB only, or is it out there for the public?
Yeah, right now it's internal to HNTB.
Okay.
It will likely remain so. It's not something that we're going to be selling. It's really just to help our internal members more quickly do that analysis.
So is the idea then, this data sets are out there, but they're complicated. They have people like you to create this toolkit. Mm-hmm. So that all of their offices then can use this to try and to get funding from these kind of sources so that they can navigate through that? Is that kind of the general corporate goal?
Yeah, that's definitely one of the main goals. I think it can be used for a lot of different use cases. So we have planners that are doing environmental justice analysis that are doing that analysis all the time, which is federally required. And then we have people that are doing grant development. So they're identifying communities that we can, obtain funding sources for. Mm-hmm. By utilizing and leveraging that data, it makes it easier to obtain those grants.
Sure.
What else? Engineers, anytime you're looking at, we do this thing called equity workshops. It's an internal workshop that we put on to really early on in a project understand the community, and then also be able to quickly identify potential equity risks that we might run into. So really early on, considering what the surrounding community looks like and how throughout the different project phases, no matter what discipline you are, can you be considering the community first when you're doing your design or whatever your project task is. So yeah, it has many different uses, but mainly what we're doing is we've gone out and we've processed all that information, so now our members don't have to spend so much time and energy doing that manual data collection, gathering, processing, and instead can focus more on the analysis. So
you took the time to do all that for them.
Yes, I was the little hamster that put it all together, but it was a team.
Sure was.
But
well, that's the general idea, right? And then how do you inform all the other offices and whether this is available, what they can do with it, and why they should?
Yeah, so we have been very fortunate. My group, the Technology Solutions Center, we have been working with the Infrastructure Mobility and Equity Group at the corporate level, so they've really been helping us guide what the Community Intelligence Toolkit should include, how can we roll that out to the firm. And so we've kind of taken a phased approach. We launched officially in May, Mm-hmm. So it's still very new, but we're kind of in the phases of still mapping out what that looks like. We do a lot of like brown bags, so like lunch and learn type presentations to get different groups engaged and help them see what we've built and have the power of it. We have like multiple ways of like on Teams creating posts. We're still working on maybe rolling out some learning resources. So like there's a lot of information there, right? And we have a lot of different disciplines throughout the company. Different disciplines are going to access that information differently, right? So like someone that doesn't do GIS every day and isn't doing analysis, someone from marketing, for example, might want to pull up our application, our Explorer, and quickly show the client, you know, here's a project, here's what we're looking at, or like brainstorming session, like over a call, like you can quickly pull that up and grab that information. Whereas you might have someone that's a GIS power user that's going in and grabbing those data sets and then doing additional analysis. So for example, like alternatives analysis, understanding and working with engineers to look at the surrounding community for two different alternatives and looking at the impacts to those communities and then refining iteratively the design based on what the community looks like and how the community will be impacted and also looking at benefits. So that's a couple of different examples. But we also have a component on the site that lets you submit an idea. So we're really perceptive and want to continue to listen to our community of users. How are they using it? What's been helpful to them? What would they find beneficial to add to it? We're going to just continue to refine that as time goes on.
That sounds great. It's a very cool concept. But I know we do have a lot of readers that are in HNTB, but for those who are not, what advice might you give them if they are wanting to go down this path? I mean, it's not proprietary secrets, right? It's just you can't. What would be some advice that they might be able to do for their own type of work?
Yeah, I would say that all the information that we're utilizing is publicly available. So we're using the U.S. Census American Community Survey data, the five-year estimates. Those are coming out every year. And then we're integrating, you know, things that are specific to transportation, and also Justice 40. We're integrating those different data sets out there. I think really the main takeaway for people that, you know, can't access it, they're not HNTB, would be that anybody can come up with this approach, but really what you can do is really focus on coming up with a data-driven solution. So like focus on streamlining the data gathering and the analysis efforts so that then your teams or your members who are accessing that information can more quickly do the or can more easily consider demographics instead of having to spend the time processing. So coming up with just a process, an approach to gathering that information. I think the other thing is too that, I don't know if this is really advice, but something that's really neat that we've been able to see is because we've gathered all this information and we've put it in front of our users and we have documentation, they can explore all the different variables that we've processed. And I think it's really neat because we've been able to see, like, live on a call, if you're mapping out certain demographic populations, such as households that don't have a vehicle, like, seeing that information, you're not used to interacting with demographics. Like, people might not have considered those metrics before. People might not have even considered. They're making more connections about the community and the project, and I think that that's really cool.
Okay.
So it's a really cool toolkit that is enabling and educating at the same time.
Okay, so again, for those who are in a different organization, you obviously spend a lot of time doing this. Why should they consider spending that much time to create one of their own? What are some of the benefits that they can also get from doing it during something similar?
I think similar to what I just mentioned, I think, first of all, in terms of efficiency, like I think sometimes it takes between like 8 to 40 hours to gather just a community profile. So a community profile is literally just a detailed information or detailed look at what a specific geographic area looks like in terms of census data. So that process can take 8 to 40 hours. And then if you think about overlaying other data sets, such as wanting to look at Justice 40 disadvantaged communities, technically right now you have to collect the census data separately, process it if you want it to be relative, and then a comparable And then you have to go out to another site, download information. I think there's a lot of value and benefit in leveraging the ArcGIS Online platform, for example, because it's a web-first approach. So everybody's always connecting and using the latest and greatest information. And instead of every time having to go and download something
mm-hmm.
that's living on someone's local computer,
gotcha.
You're connecting to every time that data is updated. Yeah, and again, another benefit would be the enabling and educating, I think, providing all of that information
mm-hmm.
in an easier way to digest
right.
makes it easier for teams to focus less on manual processing and instead
right.
actually considering what does this community look like and how is what we are doing impacting or benefiting that community.
What size do you think firm or organizations do you need to be in order to have someone worth what you did to create this thing? So you're basically doing a lot of work up front
mm-hmm.
to make it a lot easier for a lot more people. Like if you're just one office, let's say a very small engineering firm,
mm-hmm.
you'd be basically doing all of that just for yourself. How big do you, just realistically, might you need to be in order for this to be a cost-benefit worthwhile?
That's a good question.
I mean, AT&T's got, just give or take, how many potential offices? Whatever you do.
I think it's like 6,000 members.
Yes.
Right. Yeah, there's
so,
a lot of different offices.
That's a lot of people that can use the work that you do.
Right, absolutely. I mean, I think that
maybe?
You could...
Would that be... That seems reasonable. I mean, but you're the expert.
I should know how many. Oh, how... You're
to
saying...
To be useful.
To be useful?
Yeah, right. It's got to be more than one, because that
yes.
seems like that's basically just doing the same thing.
We could say 100.
Okay.
I feel like it just depends on what you're doing,
right.
obviously.
It could be five, maybe. At least you're doing it once for five.
I think the most beneficial, like independent of the number of members at HNTB,
mm-hmm.
we're working on projects across the nation, and they're always varying in scale.
Sure.
And also, like, the location of them. Like, sometimes they're completely in a rural area.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they're in an urban area. Like, there's just completely different considerations and contexts for those areas or geographies.
Sure.
So I think, like, again, it also kind of depends on what specific field you're in.
Mm-hmm. What about this surprised you about digging into this and doing it that you didn't expect to come from it?
I think the education component, and when I say the education component, I'm saying once I put this data in front of people and you're mapping, you're showing a community with someone, you're screen sharing, and you're toggling something on and off, and you're working with a local office, you're working on a project, you're sharing with the local office who knows that community
mm-hmm.
or is familiarized with that community. It's really cool to see, to be able to overlay all these different demographic variables. So looking at minority populations, low-income populations, limited English proficiency populations. It's really cool to see people make connections and, or maybe not have even known something about their own community that's
mm-hmm.
in that area. Like going in and also some of these equity workshops that we're doing, sometimes we start and, you know, the project team says, oh, we know this area. And then
mm-hmm.
you show them maps, and then they're learning more
mm-hmm.
as they see that information. And that's been really, really cool to me. And also seeing people's curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, okay, that's a really cool map. What else can we see? Like, keep showing me all these demographics.
That's great.
Yeah.